This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. We went to New White Hart Lane yesterday and it wasn't the best of evenings for the Bees. Unfortunately, we came away with a 2-0 defeat, and to be fair, it was actually probably the fairest result of the evening. Well, there's two results of the evening. And yeah, so anyway, I'm Billy Grant and I'm sitting here on a mini pod. And like I said to you, this mini pod is brought to you by Anything Is Possible. AIP Media, our friends from the South Coast, who are just, listen, absolutely wicked little agency we're working with down there. So check them out. But also, maybe you want to go and check out the highlights from the game yesterday, because I haven't done that myself. But I want to know if my man Laney has done. Laney, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Yeah, no, it's good that we're up bright and breezy and recording this. It's important to, you know, to record this season, to be honest with you. You know, it's easy not to do after last night. It was, I think the trip to Spurs, we were all really looking forward to it. And I just think it came at a time where we just didn't have the energy for it. And, you know, I think, you know, it's easy to say that it might be just a throwaway comment that, you know, them not playing last weekend made a big difference. But I think it did. You know, it's that Spurs were faster than us. I think their players are faster than us, but it showed. And you're right, it was a very fair result. And Brentford really didn't. We never at any stage looked like we were going to get anything out of that.
When Spurs get 2.43 XG and we get 0.39, I think it tells a story. Big white bubbles in the area for Tottenham, and small little bubbles, two or three of them in the area for us, which means that we didn't create that much and Tottenham created quite a bit. And to be quite honest with you, if anything, Tottenham probably could have scored maybe a goal, not more. But for a fairness rating, 95.8, so 96 was the fairness rating, which was saying actually that score and the result was pretty fair. But if you want to hear, I mean, we've talked about what we're saying, but if you want to hear what the fans said after the game, go to prideofwest.london. We've got a shorter post-match podcast from Tottenham where the fans were talking about exactly what they thought of the game. Everyone was pretty much sort of kind of resigned and tipped their hat to Tottenham. We even had a Tottenham fan on there who interestingly was just saying, oh no, you know, we're not good enough for top four. And I'm like, no, I just want you to talk about the match. Like, you know, forget about top four. But, you know, you can see the difference in where we're at, where we just want to play decent matches and maybe survive in this league. But Tottenham are like gunning for top four. So yeah, different vibe. But I mean, Laney, I mean, your day yesterday, I mean, how was your day?
It was good. Yeah, I know. I was excited about the game. Looking forward to it all week. I've been up to Spurs the night before for a book signing event with Leddy King, Michael Dawson and Mickey Hazard. So it was a bit deja vu. I went to the same place twice in 2 days, but obviously Brentford was the main thing for me. So yeah, walking in there into that big monolith of a stadium was just an incredible experience to see my team. And to play them as equals. They weren't quite equals in the night, but, you know, we were in the same league and we were there for the same league points. We went to Hackney Central before and found a nice little boozer there, an amazing pizza. Got into the ground nice and early and watched the build-up. Yeah, I mean, I thought the stadium, I think the AV was so loud that it kind of drowned out any natural atmosphere. Brentford tried to sing before the kickoff. You couldn't really hear it. You couldn't get going because of the sort of like the big subwoofers that they've obviously got in that stadium. It was booming out. Anyhow, very dramatic, big noise, lots of flashing lights. It's reminded me of a big karaoke bar. And it was good, but just a bit too much, you know, not the size of it, just I thought all the flashing lights just got in the way of the game. I was I was just distracted, you know. But yeah, you can't help but be impressed by that magnificent stadium. So yeah, they should be very proud of what they've built there. So yeah, all in all, it was really good. And the game itself, to go to these big matches, these big four, which Spurs are one of the big four in this league, and if you don't win, you just hope you're not turned over, and we weren't. So I'm not saying it's mission accomplished, because I'd like to see us got at least a point, give it a bit more of a go last night. But, you know, the worst would have been we went there and got literally properly pants down spanked, and we didn't. So we got two goals, you know, minus two on our goal difference. It could have been a lot worse, could have been a lot better, but it was a good night out.
Yeah. And it's interesting you talk about karaoke bars. I don't know if you know, it's on the way back down the Seven Sisters Road. As we were walking back towards the station, on the left-hand side, there's a bar called, I think it's just called the Tottenham, and there's a karaoke in there as well. And all of a sudden, we heard emanating from there, here we go, Tony and Brian and Bumo. And I think the Brentford fans were obviously sort of drowning their sorrows, like, you know, just trying to long out the evening. And it's funny, because I was there with Brentford scarf, red and white, and as you know, a lot of the Tottenham pubs are home only, but I'm on the side, and the bouncer comes out, he's like, come inside, like, you know, so he's like trying to drag us inside there. And that is that all the Tottenham fans seem to have evaporated after the game. I thought, that's amazing. I mean, there's 60,000 fans there, and literally you come out and like it was like a ghost town, like, you know. So that was actually quite bizarre. But, you know, we went down there. I was there with obviously my daughter Bella, and I was with all sorts of characters as well, like, you know what I'm saying. We were going down to we walked down to Seven Sisters Road, and I mean, for me, that stadium was I don't know. I've been there, this is the fourth time I've been there now, and I don't want to sound sort of kind of negative, and I don't want to sound really critical, because the fact is it is state of the art, and it's a wicked stadium, and I'd say it's a brilliant stadium for photographs. So you take photographs behind in that stadium, you see the dome and how it looks, and I think it's really, you know, it looks absolutely fantastic. And obviously, you know, Tottenham are a much bigger club than ourselves, but there was a bit of a conversation going on this morning with, you know, with our little crew this morning, talk about that stadium, about how the atmosphere wasn't as good as they thought it would be. They thought it was quite difficult for the Bees fans, A, to generate a bit of an atmosphere in there. And also, you know, I think that maybe the Bees fans are a little bit, maybe down on the way that we've been playing. So we couldn't quite get the atmosphere going as well. And maybe as well, the fact that the factions at Sing were separated all over the place. So you couldn't actually get a caucus of people singing. But we were saying that the atmosphere, you know, wasn't as good as we thought it'd be, even though I know somebody who was in the home end saying that we were coming across very loud. But also the home fans as well, It's almost like it seems quite hard for them to sort of generate a real atmosphere. When you've got 60,000 in the stadium, it must be sort of quite difficult to try and coordinate different ends to try and come together and make a noise. And, you know, they got a couple of songs which they sang, you know, they sang them. But I also thought, again, for a 60,000 stadium, I thought the atmosphere was fairly average. I mean, we've been to places. I mean, you go to Aston Villa, and when that place goes off, it goes off. It really does. And also, I thought Newcastle, which is 50,000 as well, fair play to Newcastle. I mean, I don't know. It's just because the Geordies are just absolutely bonkers, like, you know what I'm saying, in a nice way. Of course, I thought the atmosphere, like at St. James's, you know, a sort of slightly older type stadium or older new stadium, was a lot better. So this is not going out being overly critical about Tottenham. I'm just making a reflection of myself being an away fan inside their stadium. And I suppose the difficulties moving from, you know, an older stadium to a new stadium. I've got one of my friends who, you know, he actually posted this morning saying, look, you know, I love White Hart Lane, and the atmosphere at White Hart Lane was much better than it is at this stadium now, but it's our home and, you know, we have to make most of it. I mean, I don't know if that was your thoughts, Laney.
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, it's hard to criticise something that's so big and impressive, but big isn't always best, you know. And I think it was just too... I mean, no one can deny that big wall of, you know, at the far end was...
Well, you mean the end that is bigger than our whole stadium?
Yeah, you know, but there's bits of it that I really hated. You know, I thought security getting in was just so over the top. It was like literally empty your pocket. I'm sure people must have lost keys, headphones. There must have been a lot of lossage last night, and it actually sparks confrontation because I've not witnessed that anywhere else. You know, you could argue that they were less worried about COVID than they were about stuffing people's pockets. You know, it wasn't a COVID check, but they went through, they searched me forensically for whatever, I don't know, you know. So I thought that was causing a lot of grief. And then there was grief on the way out. It was some people that wanted to, you know, because it was such a big away end, still, you're meeting up with people you're traveling back with. So some people were walking out of the ground and some people were still in waiting for people. And then people that were trying to get back in to meet their mates, they were literally quite hostilely kind of pushed away. Like once you stepped out, you weren't allowed back in. And of course you understand why, but it was just policed. So it was almost like an authoritarian kind of like regime where it's our way or no way. And I know that it's crowd management, but I didn't find it very friendly and I didn't find it very welcoming, if I'm honest.
I mean, you're right as well. I mean, I see FSA Fair Cop, who's a person who, you know, looks after fans' interests as well, works for the FSA. And I think his LGBTs actually mentioned the same thing about how the stewards were very, very confrontational. And then the FSA Fair Cop said, if you've got a problem, you should write to Tottenham, because this isn't the first time that away fans have said the same thing. Now, what I'll say is that, you know, I was coming in and there were some stewards, including the head steward, number 162, he was. He was very, very confrontational, very, very, very angry. But it's almost like their whole positioning was like they're out for a fight. They're out for confrontation. It was like nightclub bouncers who are just waiting for somebody to come in so that they can punch them in the face and throw them out the door. So what you've got is that you've got a situation where people were taking time to get in because the stewarding was over the top. Okay, some people are shouting, probably saying things that they shouldn't do. But the response from the stewards was basically like, in effect, come on then, do you want to fight? And then it just kind of just turned it into a really nasty and horrible atmosphere. And also the same thing when they came down the stand and they were trying to move people off from being the stairs. And the fact is, as the police, I mean, I go to England games a lot, as you know, the England police, I have to put my hand up and say, they are wicked. When it comes to compare them to the foreign police in general always get it wrong. The German police were getting it wrong. The French police get it wrong because they're very confrontational. And what they used to do is that they used to send the English police over to teach them how they should police football games. And some of them used to take it on board, like, you know, like the Dutch police would take it on board and they're fantastic. So what they did is that they had this kind of atmosphere where they were, you know, like the English police who were trying to be friendly with the fans and sort of calming things down and have a bit of a joke with them. And then you had the Belgian police who would just go around and smash people with their truncheons and, you know, and French police who do exactly the same thing. This Tottenham stewards very much reminded me of the French police and the Belgian police, where their whole attitude was, we don't like you, we don't even really want to be here, we're more powerful than you, and we're going to sort of kind of smash you and just do, you know, do, which is really, really wrong, because it's, most people are cool and want to be there for the game, but it just creates a horrible atmosphere.
Lots of families there, Bill, you know what I mean? And like, you know, it was a big day out, like kids, you know, small Brent, you know, Brentford kids, full kit, you know, it was a massive night for them, you know, and they had to take jackets off, you know, freezing cold night, gloves off, you know, scarves off, like empty your pockets. And it was like, there was like 2 5-pence pieces in my pocket that I had to go back through and then take my coat off again and then go and find where these 2 5-pence pieces were. You know what I mean? It was so over the top, but you know, it's if you don't like it, they won't let you in. So it's kind of like there is this, you're up against a brick wall, mate.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, and coming back to it as well, because again, we're not trying to put a downer on it. And listen, this is the first time that we've been in this league, and we're allowed to comment, and we're allowed to look around, and we're allowed to show what's different, you know, about this league. And I think that for me was actually very Premier League. That is what I expected of the Premier League. You know, a lot of what's happening around Tottenham listen, not marking it. They're big stadium, everything like that. The big lights, the big kind of, you know, very corporate kind of situation, and lots of people in the stadium who don't know each other, you know. And going down the high street where basically you can't get in into any pub unless you're, you know, unless you've put your colours away and you know you can get in there. That was very, very reminiscent of what I expect Premier League to be like. But just coming back to the game itself, Lainey, I mean, the fact is that, you know, we went behind to an, well, I mean, it didn't, we couldn't quite work out how the goal went in, but it was an own goal, as it was by Canos, you know, fairly early on within the game, which put us behind. But after that, it's almost like, I wouldn't say we recovered, but we managed to almost like contain Tottenham to actually not get any more goals. And we weren't struggling, but we weren't necessarily dominating, or we weren't necessarily creating. We were kind of, you know, we were almost like treading water a little bit, and Tottenham were kind of like, you know, treading water a little bit, but they didn't really go in for the kill. No. So, you know, we went into half time thinking, to be honest with you, like, you know, okay, we haven't been great this half, but we haven't been terrible this half like we were against Burnley, and we could always pull this back. But that game was never, you know, I mean, looking at the strengths and weaknesses, I mean, like we're talking about, you know, Tottenham created a large number of chances relative to their possession, and they were effective at creating goal scoring opportunities from counter attacks. I mean, they hit us bad on the counter attack. Okay, any weaknesses, Tottenham? Not really. Like, you know, any style of play? Not really. I think Conte's probably working on that. As for Brentford, we had no significant strengths. Okay, we were poor at finishing, and we committed a high number of individual errors. You know, and that kind of sums it up. And the top performers, according to who scored as well, the top performers were Harry Kane, you know, 7.8. Lloris was 7.8. Yoo Song-min was 7.7. Reguilon, you know, was 7.6. And Højbjerg as well, 7.4. So the top five players were all Spurs players as well. Interestingly, the most shots in the game actually came from Ivan Toney, who actually had three shots in the game. So that kind of maybe sums up kind of where we were, even though, you know, they weren't necessarily big chances. They weren't high XG chances, but like you said, he had the most shots in the game. Sergio Canos actually had the most tackles in the game as well. Then Christian Norgaard, which is probably the case, trying to stem the wave of Tottenham attacks. But that, I mean, that just kind of sums up where we are sort of kind of statistically at the game. So 12 attempts to Tottenham for six for us, you know, 12 in open play, three for us, four set pieces to three, you know, one counter attack for Tottenham to none. Like, you know, I mean, but, you know, Tottenham were just better than us, weren't they, Lainey?
Yeah, you can't argue. You can't argue that they were. It wasn't really even close. They, you know, it felt like they weren't really even trying to go through the gears, to be honest, most of the time. So that surprised me a little bit. I mean, it was a relief as well. I mean, I think, you know, on all of them on the game, they would have blown us away last night. I really do believe that. You know, they had pace, they had width, they had shape. He seems to have them performing well as a unit at the moment. They know they've got some rigidity. That I was impressed by the way that they moved as blocks around the pitch, Spurs. There was nowhere for us to pass. I didn't think for a lot of that time, because they were solid. We never looked like we created anything. I mean, there was a few passages of play that looked really good. There was one particularly in the second half where it was very slick into passing. It was like seven or eight passes with Canos kind of like running through. We played a couple of 1-2s. Last ball let us down a little bit, and I don't think that was the one they scored from. There was a period in the first half where we had probably 30 or 40 passes one after the other. That was quite an impressive phase for us. I mean, on the plus side, we didn't look out of our depth. You know, again, we didn't look like a second division team in the top flight. We looked like a top flight team, but just not a very good one. And, you know, nothing really alarming, I don't think. You know, it's, you know, we come away from that without sort of being humiliated. And I think a 2-0 defeat there is kind of okay.
Yeah, okay. I mean, let's just talk about, again, the game. Let's talk about some players. And again, we're not sitting, and I'm going to talk about players on a positive and a negative. Now, what we're doing at the stage, we're going into December. Now, we're in December now. And then from December, we're going into January, which is the transfer window. And I think that, you know, it's not going to be right if we don't start actually talking about players individually themselves, because I think, you know, as a podcast and as fans, this is what people are talking about at the moment now. And I think it's only fair to. So first of all, I'm saying that we're not sitting here, we're not digging out any player. We're not kind of, you know, having a go, because I think the players would actually look at themselves and sort of say, look, you know, I've done really well today, or I've done really not as well as I'd like to the last couple of games. You know, how can I improve that? Or what do I need to do? Or do I need a rest? I think the players will be kind of reflective in themselves to actually kind of look at that. And I think as a podcast, we need to sort of kind of discuss these things as well. So I'm looking at a situation. So Sergi Canos is, okay, one scenario. I mean, where we were standing, it's quite interesting. There's a guy behind us who literally was just absolutely lambasting Canos from the beginning of the game to the end of the game, even when he didn't do anything. So somebody else, like, you know, it'd be like, good, would have kicked the ball out, and they go, "Ah, Canos, that's your fault," like, you know what I'm saying. And you know, like, you know, because of you know, Fernandes would have fallen over, goes, "Oh no, Canos, that's your fault." Like, I was like, Canos wasn't even anywhere near him. So, you know, we do understand that sometimes he gets the pick of the blame a lot of the time. But I just think that, listen, Sergi Canos, he had to be convinced, as Thomas Frank said, to play in that right wing back role. And he wanted to play in that right wing back role because he has got an offensive head on him. And it's worked for us in a number of occasions. And I think with Brentford, and again, if you look at the Thomas Frank interviews, he did one for the Coach's Voices the other day, which he talked about the tactics of the Arsenal game. And he talked about risk, right? And basically saying, look, you know, you take risks, and sometimes these risks don't come off. Like, you know, so against West Ham, we took the risk where we came defensive player off, offensive player on, boom, they come on, score in the back of the net, where other teams might have just sat tight and gone for the draw. So that risk worked, paid off for us, but other risks didn't do. Now, Sergi Canos, you know, he's a particular type of player. He's not a defender, but he's learning how to defend, obviously. But you know, I just sort of figure the last few games, listen, I know everyone's been having not been having a great game, but it's become sort of quite obvious that I think that we need a right back stroke right wing back, you know, which can do the job, who has been there and seen it and done it and done that job, which will free Sergi to actually go up further up the pitch, which is what he's normally done, and actually create some damage up there, you know, whether or not that's, you know, permanently, whether or not he starts the game, or whether or not he comes off the bench and he's actually like a real impact sub that we've got. It's like, great, Sergi's coming off the game. I don't know what your thoughts were on Sergi, Laney.
Yeah, I do. You're right. He's been asked to play in a position that isn't a natural one. And he looks like he does enjoy being out on the pitch all the time. So I think from the player's point of view, he'd rather be playing somewhere where he's not 100% comfortable than not playing at all. I think his enthusiasm is still there for all to see, and I think he's quite good at organising. Well, not organising as such, but he's quite vocal on the pitch. I see him going over and speaking to Thomas Frank at one stage, and maybe had an idea, or maybe it's not his fault that he's not as fast as Reguilon or Son. You know, these guys are like not quite Olympic athlete speed, but they are exceptionally fast players, like probably up with the fastest in the Premier League. So, you know, it's a really difficult one. I think we're at a stage at the moment now where I think we do have to try. I mean, he does look knackered as well. And so do a lot of the players. I think we're at a stage now where we do have to kind of weigh up playing, picking players that have got a lot of energy, but probably aren't the ones we put first names down on the team sheet versus ones that are on the team sheet, first names on the team sheet, but are just shagged. So it's a way up. I think, you know, especially up at Elland Road, you know, they're famous for their energy levels and their fitness. And I'm not saying that we're not as fit, but it might be worth just having the ones with the most energy out there, because they're going to have to put a big shift in. And I don't think it weak. I mean, we're not going to be weakened beyond where we were last night. We just look flat. We look flat and devoid of any real kind of cutting edge. And you can get that by fielding the B team as well. So I think I'd pick a few more different faces for Sunday. And then, you know, hopefully give a couple of them, the one that clearly is a couple struggling there, giving them a rest. You know, but unfortunately, there's a couple there that we can't afford to give a rest. There's no way that Rico Henry is going to get, you know, I wouldn't drop him for all the TNG. No, that's not happening. We can't rest We can't rest Ivan Toney and we can't rest Brian Mbeumo either. And we've got Marcus Force, I know, but, you know, Mbeumo, he had a bit of a rubbish night last night. But he's, you know, he wasn't for the lack of trying.
Okay, I mean, we're talking about players, you know, and I mean, let's just nail down as well, because again, the midfield is obviously very important. Interesting, you know, when we talk about midfield and replacing midfields at, or adding to our midfield at the start of the season, the words coming back saying we're actually quite heavily stocked in the midfield. So the feeling was that our midfield, we had lots of options in the midfield. Now, at the moment now, we've got Frank the Tank Onyeka, and as Darren called him, he's Frank the Half Tank Onyeka, and last night I think Darren relegated him to Frank the Quarter Tank Onyeka. I mean, Frank's definitely not operating with the same steam engine that he was when we first saw him turn up at the beginning of the season, is he?
No, and I think, and if I'm honest, Bill, and I think if you're honest as well, the song was probably more, you know, it hypes him up more than is what we've seen with our own eyes, to be honest. You know, a couple of games he went on some long runs, but he hasn't impressed me hugely, you know. And last night he was neither here nor there. I mean, I think Yanel didn't have a great game, but he read the game well. He was always there. He was always about to put a tackle in. He was always on the shoulder of the player that was about to receive the ball. And, you know, a couple of times he won it and he gave it away. He played some very strange kind of round the corner flicky balls that none of them came off. But Frank the Tank, I'm not sure what he did at all. So yeah, I mean, he's one that we could swap out quite easily and it not affect us really.
Yeah.
And the same, not Canos, but I think Canos actually needs a rest. You know, I think we have got fullback options. That you're right. I think we do need to go out into the transfer market in January and get a right back. I do. But I still think we've got options at left and right back that we could put some energy back into the game. Midfield, we have got some options as well. You know, Jensen came on and he looked good. The problem we have with Jensen is we don't always get 90 minutes out of him. And he flatters to deceive sometimes. But, you know, he did sort of start controlling the game a bit and got his foot on the ball, and there was some good passing and good crossing. So yeah, I mean there are some options, but I think Sunday's the day to try one or two out, I think.
Yeah, it'll be good Jensen and bad Jensen. We had better Jensen last night, and like I said, Jensen and Baptiste coming on, was it in place of Yanel and Onyeka as well, like, you know. So basically what's happened is that we're looking at this midfield, and the fact is that, you know, Baptiste, when he came on, I mean, you know, he's only on for a period of time, but you sort of think, you know, with Jensen coming on, you know, he's actually creating with Baptiste the way that he plays, you know it was a sort of kind of different type of game. So you think in the back of your head, are these players the players who are going to be actually starting against Leeds? Are we going to be sort of going in there on the upper foot, as opposed to going there with a slightly more kind of, well, defensive kind of mindset? Like, you know, listen, we've talked about, and again, we're not being negative on these players. So like I said to you out there, listen, we're Brentford fans here, but we're trying to be objective here as well. But on the flip side, you know, the positivities, and I want to, you know, pluck out a few players from this one. Now, Fernandes, who, like I said to you, he's had quite a tough time, you know, being a beat, you know, letting in lots of goals. I know he let in two goals yesterday, but also I thought that he played particularly well yesterday. He pulled off a number of very good saves as well. His distribution seems to be getting better. You know, he seems to be a little bit more comfortable on the ball. And at the end of the day, you know, it wasn't his fault that the own goal, I mean, that own goal was an own goal, and it wasn't his fault. And then the second goal was just like, you know, a break. You know, we got caught out. We got madly caught on the break. And they caught us out, and you know, I'm not being funny. Son is just such a fantastic player, and he, you know, he overscores his XG. I mean, he scores more goals than he's meant to, Son. So there's no way that he was not going to be scoring in that goal with him and the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper sort of slightly off, you know, off centre as such. So it's not going to happen. So listen, that's not his fault. But Fernandes had a good game, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and that's the position we need to get to now, is where when we do concede goals, none of them are his fault. And that's where we were at last night. I thought he made a couple of really good saves. His positioning was good. There was only that one punch, which was kind of a bit of heart and mouth moment where he went towards the goal. But, you know, Hugo Lloris, Hugo Lloris in goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he dropped one as well. Yeah, so that's exactly what, you know, what I just said. So if we are conceding, at least none of them are the goalkeeper's fault, which, you know, and he didn't look a liability. He didn't look like the defence didn't trust him. I thought that Good played the ball back to him too often. I thought Charlie Good had another solid game. He needs to pass quicker and get the ball wider. I think he could move the ball slightly faster, Charlie Good. I know he doesn't want to make mistakes, and again, it might be comfort zones, but there's a couple of times when he was passing it back to the keeper where the Canos was wide in space and actually asking for it. But going back to the goalie, yeah, he didn't really do anything wrong at all last night. So well done him.
Yeah. We talked about Good as well, just briefly. Good, I thought he had a good game as well. You know, again, everyone makes a few little mistakes here and there, but in general, I thought Good was quite solid. Again, you know, we're talking about barometers as to where you started, like, you know, as to where you are now. So for me, you know, I thought, okay, good. That's good. I'm comfortable with him. Also, Norgaard as well. I mean, Norgaard is a top player, and he is. He really is the main man. You can see him frustratingly trying to kind of just carve out some play and get the ball moving forward and breaking up the play. And I think it's quite frustrating for him, but he's a great player. And I don't know where we'd be without him, actually, in the centre of that field. So I'm tipping my hat to him as well. And I'll tell you something as well. I also thought when Wiese came on, you know, when we put the subs on, you know, we had a sort of slightly more attacking formation. We had Wiese in there. We had Jensen in there. Of course, we had Baptiste in there as well. I thought when we started to come at them, they started to, the word's not panic as such, but I thought that we looked like we could rattle them as long as we didn't, you know, when we start doing our plays, our formations and passing the ball around, we didn't end up losing it at the last minute as we used to do sometimes, which is really frustrating. Something that we used to do quite a lot in previous seasons, but I haven't seen it recently. But now again, it's really annoying where you see ourselves giving the ball away and also giving away a ball away quite a lot, not when we're not even under pressure. So that's the day. We're not doing any favours to ourselves. And that's quite frustrating when I see that. So, but, you know, I thought that when he came on. So, again, coming back to the Leeds game, which we'll talk about briefly a little bit later, you know, I'm wondering whether or not the Wiese, and we might actually just completely flip it up and actually just, you know, just try and go toe-to-toe with Bielsa at his place. Because we got caught out on the break by Tottenham. Tottenham are quite happy to sort of kind of, I mean, they pressed us more than I thought they would do because I didn't think they were going to press as hard as they did. But then they were able to sit back and let us do what we did and let us lose the ball because they knew that we were going to lose the ball at some time. And then the speed that they broke at, Laney, I mean, it was frightening at times, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, as you said, Son's a speed freak, isn't he? It's just like
afterburners.
Proper afterburners. Yeah, no one's going to keep up with him. I mean, you know, it's not like it's not just our deficiencies, it's every defence in the league, in the Premier League, you know. So that's even Liverpool's and that's even Man City's. They struggle with his pace. So it's not just Brentford are weak in the areas like covering him. It's everyone. He's a world-class player. And I was pleased that we kept Harry Kane quiet. You know, I didn't need him to go on a hat-trick last night, and so that was good. I don't think Wiese starts ahead of Mbeumo. I think Tony and Brian are nailed on all the time. They're both fit. They're our two most dynamic forwards. I think Wiese is always going to be a sub. Unless we can find another role for him, we'll see what's going on as left back. But you know, I do think Baptiste probably does start. Godos is maybe due another start as well, depending on his energy levels, and maybe Jensen as well. I think there's, you know, it's not, we need to form another midfield out of that. You know, Norgaard, you're right, you know, he's one of the best midfielders in Europe. And Yanel, hopefully he's, you know, after his injury, he's still kind of feeling his way back to the levels we know he's capable of. So again, I don't think we rest him, but we need to kind of get a formation in midfield that is able to soak up a lot of Leeds pressure, but also hurt them on the break. So it's a tough one. You know, Frank has got his work cut out in the next couple of days to kind of, as I said, re-energise that team, and we can't really go there and lose again. We need to get at least a point.
Yeah, indeed. So just the crowd was actually 54,202, which again is if you think about it, I mean, we didn't even blink twice, but if you think about it, 54,000 here, you know, 50,000 at Newcastle, you know, 42,000 at Aston Villa. We are playing in front of some quite big crowds, like I'm saying. So, you know, you also have got to sort of take that to fact for, you know, for our players, even though you sort of say they're professional players, but, you know, some of these players in the league, they've been, you know, they're playing in front of those crowds week in and week out. They're used to it. But for our guys, you know, they're not used to this. And we're not saying we're chicken, you know, rabbit in the headlights. But at the same time, this is something that is new, and it's something that they're going to have to get used to. And it's like when you play in front of crowds like this, in a cup match, it's different because you raise yourself up for it. So, you know, there's an argument to say the Arsenal game, you raise yourself up for it. You know, the West Ham game, raise yourself up for it. But you've got to do this week in and week out. And there's some sort of regulation coming on here, as in you've got to regulate yourself to, you know, go out in front of these crowds and play in front of them. And if you're not playing so well, you know, still keep your composure. So there's these things that I think are going to our game, which you can't measure on stats. You can't measure on anything. It's just, you know, it's about time. It's about, you know, getting experience in this league. And I think that's why it's really important for us to put the finger in the dam. It's obviously the dam's leaking at the moment now, but put the finger in the dam so it doesn't leak so much that we're going to go, oh, no, there's no more water in the dam at the end of the season. And we're like, oh, no, we're in the Championship dam now. You know, we need to just keep our finger in the dam so that we can keep ourselves in here, because next season we will definitely be more equipped because we have been here for a year. Anyway, that's enough talking about Tottenham. You know, I think I'll tell you something as well. I'm going to say one other thing. We played Tottenham enough in the last few years as well. I mean, now we play them in the cups a few times, and then we play them here, and we played Tottenham a few times, and we played Chelsea. We're going to, you know, the Chelsea game's coming up soon as well. And from what I can gather, it's sold out now, but it's only sold out after they allowed, you know, each season ticket holder to have about 475,000 tickets each, you know, because they've obviously kind of obviously wasn't selling fast enough. But, and I think that might have been a pricing issue, because we did question actually when they said the tickets were going to be 30 quid. We thought they might be more, because they actually went out, they looked like it was going to be 40 or 50, and people are like, ooh, what's that all about? And they came down to 30 quid. But there was a question mark about that, because I mean, I know Arsenal were selling tickets for their League Cup quarterfinal game for £11.90, I think it was, to season ticket holders. And I think there is a question mark to say, you know, shouldn't season ticket holders be getting tickets at a particular price? Because in and around Christmas, you know, shouldn't that not be the case? You know,
I don't think we take lessons on pricing from Arsenal, Bill. Do you know what I mean? It's the most expensive place to go in the world to watch football. One game, you know what I mean?
No, but it is one game. But what I'm trying to say to you is that they obviously realise with these cups, you know, what where they're going to price it at. And all I'm trying to say to you is that we obviously priced it at 30 quid, and tickets haven't flown out the door, because we've played Chelsea enough times, and playing Chelsea now is a little bit slightly meh, you know what I'm saying? And it's near to Christmas. We've had lots of games in December, and I think the £30 ticket, which is the cheapest ticket for an adult, has had a lot of people off. We know a lot of our crew who said, we're not coming to this game, we're not coming down, you know, and they've sort of offered their tickets off to other people, other Bees fans, that is, to come down. But I think what's going to happen in this game, this could be the first game of the season where we're going to have a lot of away fans in the Brentford end, because I think lots of Chelsea fans are going to be getting holder tickets for that match, because they've been made very widely available. And so it's going to be a very interesting atmosphere in that game, don't you think?
Could be. Yeah, right. I mean, I don't think 30 quid's too high for that. But, you know, I agree. It's a huge amount of games in December. And if you're going to miss any, it's probably the League Cup game. There's some absolute crackers coming up. So, yeah, you know, there's people have got other commitments as well. And, you know, it is thick and fast. You know, we joked a bit earlier on in the season that we was almost like no football in the Prem. You know, you play three games and you get a fortnight off. But this December, it kind of makes up for all of that. And because we've gone long in the League Cup, it kind of exacerbates the problem a little bit more. But, you know, I'm excited for the Chelsea game. If no one else is, then that's up to them, isn't it? You know, we're still probably playing arguably the best team in the country at the moment. And if people don't want to go, I don't think that's the club's fault. I think it's just, you know, I think it's because the, you know, literally the nature of how many fixtures we've got.
Well, it is. And I'm making a point that there's lots of fixtures this month. There's lots of expenditures this month. I know for a fact every 5 minutes I'm going out there buying another ticket for another game. And I think people make choices. And like I said to you, I've seen it within our group, the amount of people that says we're not going to that game and offering the tickets up, I think is a reflection. And the marketing team will have to look at that and say, okay, right, well, is this price right? If we dropped it by 10 quid, would we get more people coming, or would they not come anyway? You know, and that's, I think that's how marketing people have to look at situations, look at the market and see how it, how it's reflected. And obviously Arsenal got a stadium which is four times as big as ours. So obviously they need to build that. So they'll drop it to 11 quid. I'm not saying we should drop it to 11 quid, but obviously Arsenal feel a need for these games to drop the prices to try and get people through the doors. We've not dropped the prices, but I think we will probably get a lot of Chelsea fans through the doors, because I know a lot of Chelsea fans who are desperate to come to this game, and you know, they're asking me, I'm like, nah, I'm not getting you a ticket, but I think they'll get tickets through other means. But that's just my opinion. But anyway, we've got to move on, because we have got a game again in a few days time at the weekend. We got Leeds United, who are we going up to Leeds? It's a Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which again hasn't gone down particularly well. So I know a lot of Bees fans who had bought tickets for those games have actually been giving them back, or been trying to offload them, just because it's a bit of a jaunt. And it's a bit difficult on a Sunday afternoon. Some of them got kids playing football on a Sunday and they can't get out of it. So it's been a bit difficult, that one, but it is what it is. But anyway, Leeds, we played Leeds quite a lot over the last years. We've always had a bit of a ding-dong with Leeds, and it's been quite fun. You know, they've not been very happy with our players like Ollie Watkins and Neil Maupay, and they get sort of serial abuse after we play them for months and even years.
They're not very happy anyway, ever.
So, you know, they accuse us of diving and buying off referees and all sorts of stuff, you know, but then afterwards I realise it wasn't personal to us as Brentford. It just happens with anybody, which is all good. And this is not having a go at Leeds, we're just having a little bit of a championshipy type joke about the beefs that we had in the championship, because you remember the Mind the Gap song that came out after you got promoted to Thomas Frank. And as Stuart Dallas said when he got pulled up on it, he said, oh, it's only a bit of banter, because he realised, oh no, I'm going to be playing Brentford soon now. And actually I saw I sung the Mind the Gap song. But anyway, it doesn't matter, because we need to find out what Leeds have been up to in the last year or so since they've been away from us gallivanting in the top league. We're going to go to Joe from All Leeds TV, and he's going to give us everything we need to know about Leeds.
As for our first season in the Premier League, wow, what a season it was. Just absolutely gutted that we weren't there to witness it. I did get to go to the West Brom game, the last home game of the season, when, you know, COVID had hit and they let a minimum number of fans in, but it just didn't have that same feel. But the way we performed that first season, up finishing ninth the way we did, I think it's safe to say, you know, a lot of Brentford fans probably have heard the rhetoric they're doing at Leeds this season, the way you started so well. And I think before that it was Sheffield United, and then it was Wolves before that. And I do feel that we sort of the barometer with which to edit, like, climb towards, I guess, when getting promoted, you know, it'll be it's doing a Leeds before us, it was it's doing a Sheffield United. So we were amazing, and as I say, to finish ninth, I think, much like yourselves really, you come up and just impose your style. I think too many teams come up and don't try to play the way they know how and just try to cling on. I think if you look at the other two teams that come up, and this is why I've said to a lot of Leeds fans this season, the league's a lot tougher this season due to the fact that Fulham and West Brom, you know, were woeful, and obviously throw Sheffield United into that hat. The relegated teams were already sorted pretty early doors. But, yeah, I think recruitment's essential for me. I think you have to get the right players in. Leeds were lucky. Obviously, Rafinha coming in for 17 million. Great buy. You have to stick with your man as well, I think, you know, managerial wise. I think too many pushed the panic button, especially if you look at West Brom last season. I thought it was crazy to sack Bilic, and then Sam came in and did an absolutely woeful job and tried to rip up the rule book, if you like. So it's important to keep faith, because we're realising this season, you know, you're used to winning so long in the Championship, especially when you've been playing well, you'll know that yourselves, and then you come up and you have to adjust as fans. You know, we've had to do that this season, you know, but it's key to, as long as the manager's getting it right, to back the manager and continue to back the team, I guess, because there will be moments when, you know, things aren't going so well, like we've experienced this season for sure. And as I say, I just touched on it there, this season hasn't been great for Leeds United. A number of factors, one of them being been personnel. A lot of personnel's been out injured at Leeds United. Obviously, we've been without Patrick Bamford, who had a great season, first season in the Premier League, much to everyone's surprise, not just yourselves, but Leeds fans included. They'd be lying if they... Well, I would call anyone out who said they expected Bamford to perform as well as he did in his first season in the Premier League. I can't lie. But it shows how much these games come on under Bielsa. But that's one of the key reasons. As I touched on earlier, I think a lot of it, if I'm being totally honest, we got wrong off the pitch. I think the players, or lack of players that we brought in the summer, hasn't been good enough. And it just shows. And I guess for me, under Bielsa, we've been used to a style, and it wasn't so much about personnel for a period of time. It was, as long as everyone's doing their job, you know, we'll be all right. The style will get us through. However, that's changed this season. And I've recognised and realised the importance of getting it right off the pitch as well. Because I look at Leeds United and the players we were linked with. We were linked with Noah Lang as opposed to Dan James. He's been smashing it in the Champions League for Club Brugge. You know, got man of the match in a game that included Messi and Neymar. So you look at that and think, maybe we got that one wrong. Dan James, still early, I will say that. He has been getting better and better as games gone on. We were linked with Maxwell Cornet, who has smashed it at Burnley. Notably, we were looking at him as a left-back option. He'd played left-back, I think, at Lyon for a season and done well there. And we know that Bielsa likes versatile players. But we opted for Junior Firpo from Barcelona. Again, not been great at all. And then, of course, we were linked with Conor Gallagher. Conor Gallagher deal was done. And then, he decided to stay in London. I think Palace came knocking. His friend Mark Guay, he's at Palace. Vieira was there, staying in London, and he opted to do that. And look at the season he's had. You know, I think he's got amazing numbers for a midfielder in the Premier League this season, up there with the best of them, if not the best, in terms of, you know, goal involvements this season. So it really showed me that had we have got them, you know, we failed to get a midfielder, so we're waiting for Forshaw to return, who has now, and has certainly improved our team, and that's why results are starting to improve. But had we have, say, gone with Noah Lang, Maxwell Cornet and Conor Gallagher, I genuinely believe we'd be much higher up the table. And it just shows you that you have to get things right on and off the pitch for me. And I think as a club, we got it wrong this summer. And I expect us to rectify that in January, maybe not. But definitely in the summer, you'll see a big overhaul, because there's a lot of players at Leeds United that are coming to the end, I think. You know, they're all not getting any younger, as it were, so we'll have to wait and see on that. As for Bielsa, I put a tweet out a while ago, actually. I said, I will never, ever call for this man to lose his job. I don't think many Leeds fans would. There might be some that are reactionary that sometime reply and on YouTube. And I think, really, like, are we going to go there? Obviously, the media likes to peddle the rhetoric, you know. Is it time for him to move on? Have people figured him out? But for me, Billy and the rest of the Bees fans, for what he's done to this football club, I'll never, ever ask for that man to leave. Because I know where this club was. You'll know yourself, we were languishing in the Championship, not going anywhere, poor manager after poor manager, and this guy has come in and transformed not only the club but the city as well. The city's totally different, you know. Even just little things. There's a mural tour now in Leeds that includes loads of different murals that are on what, just, I know that might sound trivial, but it just shows how he has created that connection between the city and the fans and the club again, you know, which maybe wasn't there prior to him coming. You know, it was checked with so much disdain for such a long time. So he has totally changed it. And now, listen, I've got a tattoo of the man on my calf, so I can't be calling for him out, because that wouldn't look good, would it? But no, he's amazing. Look, no manager is without criticism. This is what I'm saying. You're not exempt from criticism. I think Leeds fans that are like me sometimes say, well, you can't criticise. You can, because a manager can't always be 100% right. And there has been times this season where maybe personnel choices, the persistence with certain individuals that have been given chance after chance and still yet are proving their worth to the squad. Tyler Roberts, for example. And there's a lot of people who would prefer to see Cooper not start and have Pascal start, who's who's arguably going to be our future, you know, left centre back for years to come. People want to get him in now. Not a lot of people were happy with the business done, you know. Dan James, for example, 25 million, it was a lot of money, and that would have been pushed heavily by Bielsa. So, you know, no manager is without criticism, but, you know, for me, what he's done to this football club, where we are now and where he'll leave us, because I do believe, I'm one of them that believes this will be his last season. I think he leaves us in the summer, and I'll forever be grateful for what he's done, because he's brought us back to, for me, where we belong. And yeah, no one was ever going to do that. No one was ever going to do that. So yeah, absolutely buzzing with him being at the helm. And I keep saying to people that do question it, enjoy it. Enjoy it while you can, because I've been treated to the best football I've seen live in my, you know, time as a Leeds United fan. And, you know, who's to say a new manager might come in, overhaul of the squad, and things might change drastically. And before you know it, we might be knocking on a manager's door to say, just keep us in the league. And we're better than that, I think. We're better than that under Bielsa. As for on the pitch, what you can expect from Leeds United, high pressing, high energy, waves and waves of attack, as long as we play to our best, which we haven't been doing of late. However, there has been some better performances, more notably against Crystal Palace last time out at Elland Road. So I think the players will be ready to go. Who should you look out for? Of course, Rafinha. Like, every man has to look out for Rafinha. He's absolutely exceptional. I don't think he'll be with us forever, so we have to enjoy him as well. He should be playing in the Champions League. He was playing in the Champions League for Rennes, but made the move to the Premier League. Obviously, he'd take a sideward step because his next career move. You're talking top four within England, I think, for sure. Liverpool, maybe. I'm not trying to sell him, but I'm just telling you, you know, this is how good this guy is. And we can be playing poor, and he can pull a rabbit out of the hat. So, for sure, Rafinha is your man to look out for. In terms of suspect players of late, Junior Firpo, the new left-back that I spoke about, played 45 against Brighton, was terrible against Tariq Lamptey, got hooked. And then Strout got injured in the following game against Palace, and he had to come on at half-time, and within 5 minutes he was caught out of position, brought someone down on the box and got a yellow card. So he did grow into the game after that and played well, but I do think that's a real suspect area for us. And of course, up front as well, hopefully Bamford will be in the squad, but I expect Tyler Roberts to lead the line, and I can't tell you the last time he scored a goal. So they're the suspect areas. As for Brentford, rightly or wrongly, look, I'm really confident ahead of this fixture, just because I feel after Palace and at home and winning the game so late on via a last gasp penalty, what that'll have done for the squad and the mood will be absolutely bouncing. And of course, like I said, you might see Patrick Bamford and Luke Ayling involved, which will massively boost the crowd and the squad as well, because we've missed them two players who've been out for such a long time. So, I am really confident ahead of the game. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. But as for Brentford, of course, we have to be wary of Ivan Toney. I think he'll be licking his lips, looking at someone like a Cooper, and thinking he can get joy. And I think, look, as much as I dislike the man, I do rate Thomas Frank. I do as a tactician, and I think he will have studied Leeds United, and of course, you know, he'll come up with a game plan. We've seen that in the opening day against Arsenal, you know, the way that he thought, do you know what, these are going to struggle up on high, so that's what we're going to do, and you won the game. And if you get the tactics right, you can cause us all sorts of problems. You've just to look at Brighton and Graham Potter. He's had Bielsa's number in the Premier League in every single game, and we put in a dire performance. So sometimes it can be about whether or not the opposition allow Leeds to play. If the opposition get their tactics right, you know, presses or funnels into wide areas, for example, and then, you know, double up on a Rafinha, you know, and take him out of the game, sometimes it can be found wanting. And, you know, if take for example, you know, Palace allowed us to build up from the back, and if you don't let Leeds do that, sometimes we can hit it long. And when you're aiming at, you know, Dan James, who's not the biggest, and, you know, you've got Pontus at the back, if indeed he plays, or Tyler Roberts, you know, you can certainly get joy and dominate the game. But it all depends on how Thomas Frank goes about it. I feel like I might have already answered this, but as I say, I'm confident for this game. I'm going to stick my neck out and say Leeds United win the game 2-0. I just think we will have too much for Brentford on the day, and especially at Elland Road. But listen, I'm under no illusion. Brentford are a fantastic side. They have a great coach. They have some fantastic players. It'd be interesting to see if Sergio Canos plays, because he's not well liked at Leeds United. it was only recently I was talking up Morpé, actually, when we played Brighton from his time at Brentford. So, you know, they always can pull a rabbit out of the hat. They're a great side. And I do think, though, Leeds will be able to press the centre-backs. I'm hopeful anyway. Pinnock and Pinnock's great on the ball, but if Pontus plays alongside him, I think we can cause problems. I'd love to see Bamford start, but I think Rafinha again will be the difference maker. And I'm going to see Leeds United get a goal in either half. It won't be an easy game, though. It won't surprise me if Brentford got something. But I'm just really confident after the other night against Palace. So I'm going to stick my neck out and say Leeds United 2, Brentford 0. Thank you for having me, though, Billy. I feel like I've talked an absolute age there. Brentford fans that are going up, enjoy the game, enjoy the Elland Road atmosphere, as I'm sure you will. It's been getting plaudits this season in the Premier League, because we know the Premier League's a little bit watered down now. but I'm sure you'll enjoy it. You guys know from obviously recent history anyway. So listen, enjoy the game. And if, you know, we do get beat and I am wrong, you can come and give me some stick on my channel. So Just Joe Football Show over on YouTube. Please check it out. As I say, we'll be doing a preview on Friday as well, ahead of the Premier League games and talking Brentford. So please do get involved, and thanks for having me. So hello, Bees fans. It feels a little bit like rivalry resumed. my name's Joe. I'm on the Just Joe Football Show. You can get on YouTube, covering all things Leeds United, but we do a lot of Premier League content as well, including previews, reviews. So we also cover Brentford quite a little bit, and some opposing fans, not myself included, have been quite gushing about Brentford this season, more specifically Thomas Frank, but not from me, because as I said, there's that little bit of rivalry there, but no, great to be asked to do this, not quite chatting at the pub, but out on my dog walk in the lovely snow, but there you go. So, Leeds went up two seasons ago from the Championship, leaving, of course, Brentford behind. That season was a great season. I think, you know, for us to win it the way that we did, especially when, you know the chant yourselves, guys. Leeds are falling apart again, and we had a bit of a fall off at different periods throughout both Bielsa's season, really. But this time we finally got over the line, and we did it in style in the end. A canter, 10 points if my memory serves me right. And I think my most favourite thing about that season was obviously returning to then win, Derby County. Philip Cock, who might have been there then, and Wayne Rooney included, had to give the Leeds players a guard of honour onto the pitch. And and the lads had been on the Raz the night before, so they were all half cut, half of them, and we still battered them. I think it was 4-1, so that had to be a highlight for me. But obviously Brentford not going up. I always felt, and I used to say this on my preview, that for me, you can't not finish in the top six and then suddenly make that jump to automatic. It's probably been done before, but I think experience counts for an awful lot. And obviously, I know you didn't go up first time around in the playoffs, obviously, with Fulham, and I just knew, you know, second time around you would, because experience counts for a lot. I just had to look at Leeds United's situation, and obviously losing to Derby the way we did, I just knew second time around. And rightly so, a lot of people were worried that season when we went up about Brentford. But I said, and I might be wrong, but it was like, they haven't finished in the top six. For me, you just can't make that leap. Experience counts for a hell of a lot in this game, and you know, and you came on from that experience, and obviously came up the following year, and it's good to have you in the Premier League, and have our boy Mr. Pontus Janssen in the Premier League as well.
So there you go, Joe, have a go from All Leeds TV, and very happy with Leeds to the Championship, with their first season. Very happy with them this season. He's still quite happy with them, but you know, obviously not as good as the first season, but we'll see, because there's a long way to go. Leeds United, Laney, their strengths, creating long shot opportunities. They like a long shot, they do. They also like stealing the ball from the opposition, which is going to be quite bad news if we're as sort of latent and as if we're as sort of kind of lacking in energy as we were on Thursday night. Shooting from direct free kicks as well and attacking set pieces. Where they're not so good, though, is finishing, scoring chances, avoiding individual errors as well, defending against through ball attacks, sort of enduring fouling in dangerous areas as well, which might work for us because we like a bit of a free kick, defending counter attacks as well, which is again something that Brentford is meant to be our top game as well, and also stopping the opponents from making chances as well and aerial duels. They're not great in the air, so listen, you know, this is not saying Leeds are completely beatable, but we've seen through that there are ways that we can get at Leeds, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, they've got pace aplenty, though. You know, you've got Daniel James, Rafinha, Stuart Dallas likes to get forward a bit, Tyler Roberts. They beat Palace thanks to the last gasp winner on Tuesday night. Rafinha got the goal. They do worry me. Because just for that, just the pace of them, I don't think they're a lot better than us. I think there's a bit of a Bielsa myth, if I'm honest with you. I thought if he was such a great international manager, he'd have a better team. I'm not saying, you know, this isn't a knock at Leeds, but they're just an average-ish Premiership team. I'm surprised he's not moved on to a bigger club in brackets. If he's the best coach, one of the best coaches in the world, because he certainly hasn't got one of the best teams in the world, and that's a fact. And again, that's not a snide dick at Leeds, because they've got a lot of good players, but they're not exceptional players. So there's a good chance that we can match them and negate them. I still think they're going to be too strong for us a bit. So I'm a bit worried. I don't think we're going to come away with much still. Adam, we reacquaint ourselves with Adam Forshaw probably, and Stuart
and Dallas.
And Dallas, yeah. So there's, you know, they've got Jack Harrison as well. We know about him. He's got a load of pace. And there's loads of them that have got the ability to stretch us. Maybe this is a bit more of a structured defensive backs to the wall performance for us, but I think that could go badly wrong as well.
Yeah, and Rafinha, I mean, top scorer for Leeds with 6 goals, then after that's Rodrigo with 2, and then everybody else with 1. Like, you know, so I mean, the main danger person, as you say, you could see who their main danger person is, and you see the difference between us and Ivan Toney. You know, I mean, Ivan Toney obviously has a couple of goals behind him as such, but you know, they definitely have got their person, their target person, who is actually kind of doing the business for them as well. You know, they're quite aggressive as well. Strojic as well, you know, quite an aggressive player as well. Cooper as well, Rodrigo. They all like a bit of a battle as we lead. So I think that they're, you know, they're not going to be passive and sitting down there. They're going to be, you know, definitely aggressive, definitely taking the game to us. Like I said to you, they like long shots, taking down the right, you know, possession football. They're aggressive and playing their own half, you know. And so if we're not up for the inverted commas fight, we're going to probably lose this game hands down, because we need to really be up for it. And, you know, I think the fear is on that Tottenham game that we're just a bit passive, weren't we?
Mm. Yeah, no, passive is the right word, yeah. We didn't roll over at any stage, but I don't think there was the real belief that we were going to get anything out of that, especially after going a goal down quite early, you know, within the first 15 minutes. And I think they knew that was a long way back. You know? So yeah, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to it though, Bill. You know, it's always a lively afternoon. The crowd get behind the team. It's a big atmosphere. The whole ground will be open. We've been there a few times, and not all of it's been open, but it's another proper top flight game for us. And I'm going to try and savour as many as I can.
Yeah, indeed. So look, I mean, just quickly, I'm going to say, I'm going to ask you if anything is possible, Laney. What are you going to say the score is? And I'm not trying to lead you into kind of saying that Brentford will win, because I'm not doing that at all. But I'm saying if anything is possible.
anything is possible, to be honest at the moment, if anything is possible, I'll take a point all day now. And depending, obviously depending on how the game pans out, we could get more. So I went too much with my heart for the game last night. I'm gonna go with my head this time. I think it's another 2-0 defeat for Brentford.
Okay, so ladies, nothing is possible for you. Okay, for me, I'd say I've got to say that actually anything is possible. And we're going to go for a 1-1 draw. Again, the clean sheet isn't quite happening for us, but I just think that we're going to have to, you know, just pick ourselves up, and we're going to... And also, I think that Leeds are, and I'm not saying this in a disrespectful way, they're a Championship team. When I say that, I look at all the teams that come up from the Championship, like West Brom and Leeds and, you know, Watford, and they're teams who kind of like, we're all having a little bit of a battle there down in that league beforehand, and we're back in there again. So we know how to sort of battle against each other. So I think it's a bit more of a battle that we're used to, rather than being Tottenham playing it down to Reguilon, who's running down the wing at 375 miles an hour, and then putting it to Sun, who's running at 745 miles an hour, you know, which is like, whoa, this is a different situation. So I think it's going to be a little bit more in our comfort zone to a certain extent. And I think we're going to get a 1-1 draw. So there you go.
As I said, I'll take that right now, Bill. Thank you very much.
That's all right. I'll tell you something. I'll put it in the post to you, lady. So anyway, but look, this is the besotted Pride of West London. Pride of West London. I was almost going to go North London because I was in North London for so long, actually. It's funny. We're actually with Darren and we're actually hanging out outside. Unless you get that down at Brentford, they actually had their sort of the jerk chicken stall. I don't know if you saw it, where the geezer was like, they were playing all the reggae and the guy was toasting. You know, he's like toasting while you're sitting down there getting your jerk chicken and your rice and peas and your patty and everything like that. So I was just thinking, actually, tell you something. If you want to get something down at Griffin Park, get them down at Griffin Park. You know, let's have a bit of reggae rice and peas down at Griffin Park before the match. That might get the players all G'd up and get the crowd going, actually. But anyway, Besotted Pride of West London podcast. This is brought to you by Anything Is Possible, AIP.media. And we got a game on Sunday against Leeds. Don't forget to subscribe to us, please. And then you will get all the podcasts down to your phone or your laptop or your iPad immediately. Write us a review in iTunes and then we'll go up in the charts, which is all good. Don't call the police like Laney has just done, as you can hear in the background there. Cool. Also, like I said to you, if you want to buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Don't forget, there's a couple of people. I think it's Joe and there's another character for the competition who got to get back to us because, you know, Anything Is Possible is buying you a beer because you actually won the competition. So please don't forget Joe, who lives down in Glastonbury. And the other character as well, I haven't got his name here at the moment now. Get back to us on the Anything Is Possible competition for the Tottenham game. And maybe we should actually have bought actually Terry Hurlock and O'Mara back for the Tottenham game, because maybe we might have got at least a point out of it if we did, but it didn't quite happen as well. But other than that, we're going to have another podcast. We're going to have a weekend review probably on the Monday after the Leeds. Just check that out. I'm Billy Grant and I'm sitting here with Laney Lane.
Good afternoon.
And I'm going to go out now. I'm going to drink and meet my friends. And I'm going to have a very nice afternoon and a very long night. And I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to go to AFC Wimbledon. I've been invited to the director's box in the AFC Wimbledon as well. So I'm going to have a bit of a long football weekend, a drinking and footballing weekend. So I'm going to put the Tottenham game behind me and I'm going to enjoy myself with chums aplenty. So Billy Grant here, Laney Lane here. As we say, Brentford need to go to Leeds and get a point, as we say.
Come on, you.
Come on, you.
Brentford FC, come on you Brentford, come on you bees, come on you Brentford, come on, sit on
your face. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.